Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Vanished ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
It's just something that you think that, okay, this can't be real. Okay, she's going to pop up. She'll show up, and maybe not right away, but it may be a week or two. But, like, this is just outrageous. And I know it happens a lot. But when it happens to you, it's just real, and you just can't believe that all these people can just disappear.
I just couldn't believe that something like this could happen. She came into this beautiful space, and to have it just ripped away and taken from me, from her grandkids, who love their grandma so much. It's just so heart-wrenching.
In 2018, 56-year-old Terry Ackerman was living in Lac Bouie, Colorado with her husband, Dale. Terry spent much of her time babysitting her two grandchildren, whom she adored. On Thursday, August 23rd, 2018, Terry was at her daughter's home watching the kids. She left that evening, hugging everyone goodbye, stating that she would see them again in the morning. What no one knew at the time was that this was the last time they would see Terry. Terry called her daughter Amber when she got home to let her know that she made it there safely. Everything seemed fine. Later that night, Terry called Amber back again and seemed upset, but didn't go into much detail. She said that she wouldn't be able to watch the kids the following morning. Amber never heard from her mother again. I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 295 of The Vanished, Terry Ackerman's story. Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices in audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner, and it's great for my evening walks too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. In order to understand where Terry was in life when she disappeared in 2018, we're going to take a look back at her life and the experiences that shaped who she became. We spoke to Terry's younger sister, Kim, who gave us some background information on Terry's younger years.
We are 3 years apart. We both were adopted. She was the first to be adopted in Spain, and then my dad was relocated to Dyess Air Force Base in Abilene, Texas, where they adopted me. And then we went back to Spain, and my parents adopted my twin younger brothers from an orphanage. My sister was very nurturing. She always enjoyed playing with baby dolls and pretending like she was a mother. And we had a pretty good relationship. She, I think, had something in her where she was always longing to locate her biological mother, who was Spanish and had actually gotten involved with a serviceman in, I think it was Madrid. So that kind of haunted her a lot while growing up. And she had a little somewhat tumultuous relationship with my mom. So she and my mother weren't very close, but as time went by and she got older, they became closer when she became a mother.
Terry struggled with her mental health, but after getting a bipolar diagnosis and finding the right medication regimen that worked for her, things began to turn around for Terry.
My parents were very strict. We were raised in a very strict Southern Baptist home where we had to address our parents as yes, ma'am, no, sir. We went to church 3 times a week. Terry was really involved with the church when we were younger. We all were. And my parents just never really thought much about having any of us see a psychiatrist or a therapist or anything of that, especially my dad. My dad was like, no way, there's nothing wrong with my kid. Nobody's going to see it. And so for many years, Terry went undiagnosed, which I know was really hard on her. But once she got diagnosed and got treated, it was seeing somebody that cared about her enough to keep track of it, she was really doing well. She was diagnosed with a bipolar disorder, and we never knew. All through growing up, she had some anger issues, but never really knew what those were about. And once she was put on medication, she kind of transformed into this different person that was just so beautiful. I would say that right around my 30s, we weren't very close because I was starting a family and I was living in Illinois and she was in Maryland. We just didn't get to see each other very much. But come my 40s, we relocated to Maryland and Terry and I became very close. We started talking, gosh, almost daily on the phone, and she was my go-to person. She was my, she became my best friend after not, you know, really talking for years. We became pretty close and she was doing really well. She would coach me through some of the things that I was going through, which always positive, always upbeat, always trying to find the good out of things, especially when it came to my mother. If I was having an issue with our mom, and she would go, now, come on, Kim, you just got to understand who mom is. And it was really great. And then she relocated to Colorado.
Terry's daughter, Amber, told us about growing up with her mom and how they ended up moving from Maryland to Colorado.
As long as I've known my mom, she's been a pretty quiet person. Never really had a huge social network of friends. If she did, they were a couple friends that she had that were just close to her, maybe two or three of them. She did live her whole life with bipolar anxiety, but she fought back and forth as far as taking medication. And, you know, eventually over time, she started getting regular on them and things seemed to be okay with her. She served the military when she was 18 until she, I would say probably about 10 years, 15 years she served in the military, and then married my stepfather and we moved to base and just moved kind of every 3 years. And then her and my stepfather didn't really work out and they split and divorced. Then she met Dale, which was her third husband, her most recent husband, ended up moving to, so we used to live in Maryland, but she moved to Colorado to be with him. And me and her were always really close. So I moved with her just to kind of start my life over in Maryland. It wasn't working out too well. So we moved out here. I think that in the beginning, things were fine. They didn't even really honestly know each other a whole long time before they ended up getting married. I would say probably a good 4 months. But at the time, it seemed like things were fine.
Terry had moved from Maryland to the small town of Lock Bowie, Colorado, which is about 25 miles northeast of Denver. Amber explained what Lock Bowie is like.
Lock Bowie, it's super tiny. And that's the thing. It's like everybody kind of knows everybody. And if somebody sees something, the world knows about it kind of thing. You stick out like a sore thumb if you're not from there. So it's tiny, tiny little town.
When Amber first moved to Colorado, she lived with her mom. And things seemed to be going okay for Terry. Amber eventually moved out on her own. Amber and Terry got into a routine where Terry would help out and babysit, while Amber worked long hours as a 911 dispatcher.
So when I moved out here with her, things were okay. There didn't really seem to be a whole lot going on until I moved out on my own, which was about 25 minutes from their house. She used to watch my children while I worked. My kids are... Well, at the time, they were 6 and 3 at the time. 7 and 3, excuse me. And she would come over every week and watch them probably a good 2 to 3 times during the weekday. I'm a 911 dispatcher, so my hours are 12-hour days. So I would work from 3 a.m. till about 3 p.m. And then I would go home and take the kids from her, and she would drive back home to Lock Bowie.
Amber knew that things between her mom and stepdad weren't great. But she got the feeling that her mom wasn't telling her how bad things actually were.
She married her husband for about 6 years. And off and on, she would express that things were verbal between them, verbally abusive. But she would never tell me a whole lot as far as if anything was physical, because she just didn't want me to not like him. So I think there's a lot of things that she kept from me in that sense. So he also had a drinking problem and a drug problem. And when he would do both, he would become very vulgar with her, very ragey, like verbal again. But she just was that kind of person that wanted you to accept someone, so she wouldn't really express the full on detail on what was really going on.
Amber believes that when she moved out on her own, that this was a turning point for her mom. Things seemed to get worse with her husband, Delbert, who also goes by the nickname Dale.
He would cut her down really bad to where she felt super uncomfortable. She would doubt herself mentally. Just very narcissistic he was towards her. She told me that she didn't know she wanted to be with him anymore because it was like he didn't care. He never talked to her. He was really, like I said, verbally abusive and tore her down and made her feel like she was stupid. She couldn't trust him. So I think towards the end, I think she started to see him for who he really was. She said there was a couple times when he was drinking and she was trying to talk to him about working out things in the relationship. You know, he flipped everything on her and then got in her face, like really close to her face. And she said she was like, you know, kind of scared her a little bit. And she's like, I just can't deal with this anymore. He's not the person that I met in the beginning and those kind of things. I think that he started to show his true colors later because she even said that he didn't drink that much in the beginning when they first met each other. But it all started as soon as she moved out here.
After Terry moved to Colorado, she would travel back to Maryland to visit with her sister, Kim. Kim noticed a difference in Terry during one of their visits.
She would come and visit. I think she and Dale was her third husband. They came out to Maryland a couple of times to visit, which is really awesome. We had the best time when she'd come visit. The second time she came, she was with Delbert, and she was acting really like zoned out, like really different and present, but kind of not present. And I got the feeling that her meds were mixed up, like something was on, because she's almost like a zombie to some degree. I mean, it was really bizarre to me, and I never mentioned it then. I just kind of let it go, thinking, well, you know, maybe something's up. It was almost as if he was in charge of her. She was dressed like he was. It just was a side of my sister I hadn't really seen before. I just had never seen that. And she was happy when she was around me, but I didn't see a lot of interaction between the two. Never really saw them kiss, never saw them hold each other, hold hands or anything. I was trying to become a Mary Kay salesperson, and they were over at the house, and I said, Terry, let me practice on you if you could be my client. And so she was all excited, and I did her makeup for her, and I can remember him saying, I don't like that on you. I don't like that makeup on you. And I was like, what are you saying that for? She looks gorgeous. And it wasn't even that much, you know, I mean, it was just a little bit here and there just to kind of lighten. And she was beautiful. And I just remember thinking, you know, he's a fun sucker and kind of an asshole. I didn't think he was for the good of my sister ever. That I can tell you for sure. I just never thought that he really, really loved and cared for her.
Like Amber, Kim also noticed the way that Dale treated Terry, and she didn't like it.
Delbert was just not nice. He wasn't kind to her. He would say things that were degrading, and she would blow him off. You know, she would just move her hand like, oh, shut up, Delbert. She wouldn't say shut up, but she'd just be like, whatever, whatever. And so that's when I started really not liking him very much. I didn't trust him.
In August of 2017, Terry made her last trip back to Maryland for a wedding. This gave her the opportunity to spend more time with her sister. Kim has fond memories of this time that she spent with Terry.
She came to Maryland for her son's wedding. And she came alone and she stayed with me, Terry did, and we had a really wonderful time. We just laughed, and oh my gosh, we had such a great time. And that was the August prior to her disappearing. So it was a year prior to her disappearing. And I had not seen her in that year prior to. We talked all the time on the phone. She was really doing well. Last time that I saw her, she was great. She had self-confidence. She was so friendly to everybody. I mean, gosh, she went to one of my daughters in acro gymnastics, and she had a tournament, and we traveled to it. And Terry would just start talking to random strangers, you know, hey, you look so great out there. And she never used to do that growing up. She was always shy and withdrawn, and, you know, she didn't speak very much. And she was just, it's like she flowered, you know, she came into this beautiful space.
Then there was another event that occurred that seemed to increase Terry's stress, and she occasionally voiced her uneasiness about it. Her husband's son came to live with them. Amber told us more.
In the midst of all that, he ended up having his son, Christopher, moved here. He wanted to come out here and start his own dent repair business. And so he stayed with them in their trailer in Lock Buoy for probably a good 6 months. wasn't a very sociable person, kind of awkward guy. But my mom started making comments recently that she was really uncomfortable around Chris, and she wouldn't really necessarily come out and say why. She just said he was awkward. She didn't feel comfortable in her own home, just things like that. And we never really thought anything about it.
We also spoke to Geraldine, who is the mother of Amber's fiance, Jesse. She met Amber at work, and later Geraldine and Terry became good friends. Geraldine told us about their friendship.
I knew Terry very well. You know, we spend like holidays together, and her husband, and me, because I'm not married. You know, like Thanksgiving, Easter, all this stuff, 4th of July. Went to the flea market. I loved her a lot. She was really nice to me.
Geraldine wasn't aware of the issues within Terry's marriage. That was until Terry slept over at Geraldine's house one night.
The weekend that she stayed with me at my house, we were having a birthday party. She told me a lot of stuff that I didn't know about, and I just thought she was having a really good life with her husband. She just told me that it wasn't working out. She cried, and she said that she didn't want to be with him no more. You know, she don't know too many people here. So I told her, I said, well, if you want to leave him, I said, why don't you come stay with me? Because I live alone. I said, and I'll help you with whatever you need to do. And she said, okay. And he came and got her the next day. And she went home, and that was the last time I seen her. The next thing I knew, she was missing. But I didn't know that she was having all these problems with her husband. I didn't. They had no idea because, you know, they looked normal to me when I seen them together. And that's why I thought, gee, this is weird. She told me all this stuff, that she was afraid of him, that she didn't want to go home. And I said, why? What's going on? And she said, he's just so mean to me. And I said, okay. And I said, has he ever hit you or anything? And she goes, no, but his words were worse than, you know, than hitting. And I said, oh, God, Terry. I said, you need to get out of there. Oh, and then she did mention something about the son. She said that since the son had got there, that things were worse. And I said, why? You don't like the son? And she said, no, he don't like me. And I said, well, come and stay with me. I said, you know, he can't stop you. I said, get your clothes and come over here and you could stay with me, because she said she didn't want to interrupt her daughter and my son to live with them. And I said, well, you know, you're welcome to my house, to my place. I said, anytime. And she never came. And that was the last I heard from her. Then I told Amber, and Amber said, well, she goes, well, I know she's having problems with him, but I didn't know it was that bad. And she was desperate. She was crying. And she even cried the whole night.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable. And you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this, and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. Amber explained that in the lead-up to Terry's disappearance, she had been secretly making plans to get a divorce. But then, with little explanation, things seemed to shift on the last day she saw her mom.
Then the last day that I had seen her, which was August 23rd of 2018, she was crying because prior to this, my mom was actually trying to get a divorce from Dale, but secretly trying to get a divorce. And she was doing things behind his back as far as trying to apply for assistance through the state, trying to apply for food stamps through the state, anything that she could do to get on her feet and leave him, including opening up a separate bank account, which he didn't know about. Also, my mom has a military bank account, you know, for being in the military and then get part of my stepdad's retirement. So money would be in there every month. So the last day that I seen her, she was saying that, I don't know if I want to get a divorce. And she just seemed really off. She had changed her mind from full on wanting to get a divorce into changing her mind just all of a sudden. And she was making comments like, I don't really want to go home. I don't feel comfortable. But I said, are you sure? What is going on? She's like, nothing. I'll be fine. And that was the last time I seen her, which was August 23rd around 4:30 p.m. I told her, I said, make sure you call me when you get home, like she always would do. And she called me probably 5 o'clock-ish and told me, hey, I made it. And she sounded fine.
It appeared that everything was going okay that evening. Amber wasn't sure why her mom seemed to have a change of heart about the divorce, but she was relieved to hear that her mom had made it home okay. Then, a couple hours after she had spoken to Terry, Terry called back with a completely different tone.
She called me again that night at 7:30 p.m., stating that she wasn't able to watch the kids and she was crying. And I don't know what happened in between that 2.5 hour time frame, because she was fine the first time I talked to her. And then the second time it changed to, I can't watch the kids in the morning. She said, are you mad at me? And I said, I'm not mad. I said, I just don't understand. You just said you are fine and now you're not. And she's like, I don't know. I just haven't slept in a while. And I told her, I said, okay, well, go lay down and then I'll talk with you in the morning. We'll get it figured out. And that was the last time I heard from her.
Amber didn't know what to make of this shift in her mom over the course of a couple of hours. Terry's sister Kim had spoken to her the day prior to this, and something was clearly wrong, but she wasn't quite sure why Terry was so distraught.
The last time I spoke with my sister was Wednesday night prior to the Friday, the 24th, and she was very distressed. She was upset. She was clearly just not doing well, and I remember saying, well, are you taking your meds properly? And she goes, it sounded like there was something off, just something off. And she wasn't crying, but she was very upset. And I knew that I needed to contact her, you know, within the next couple of days to make sure she was feeling okay. And then I didn't talk to her on Thursday. And then Friday, I got the call from Amber.
So Kim had heard from Terry on Wednesday, and she sounded upset. Amber saw her on Thursday, and she seemed to be second-guessing her decision to move forward with a divorce. Terry mentioned that she didn't really want to go home, but decided to return home anyway. She called Amber when she got to the house she shared with her husband, Dale, and things seemed fine, but later called Amber again, crying and saying she couldn't watch the kids the following day. Amber wasn't sure what was happening with her mom, but she and her fiancé, Jesse, made alternate arrangements so that he could stay home with the kids while she went to work that day. Amber's fiancé, Jesse, was home with the kids when he got a surprise knock at the door.
The next day, I went to work as usual, which was Friday the 24th, and my fiancé stayed at home because we didn't have anyone to watch the kids that Friday morning. And then he said at 6 o'clock in the morning her husband shows up at our door, faintly knocking on the door, and Jesse goes to answer it, and he said, "What are you doing here?" He said, "Well, I'm here to watch the kids." He never called us that night to say, "Hey, change of plans. Since your mom's not coming, I'll be there in the morning." And he just randomly showed up. And I guess he had told Jesse that he was out there about 20 minutes prior, just sitting in the parking lot waiting for 6 a.m., which he never does that. But if anything was like this was to ever happen, they always call the night before and say, "Hey, since your mom's not coming, I'll be there." But that didn't happen at all. That Friday morning, Jesse said that he stayed at a house with Jesse all day long, basically till about 2:30, kind of just acting strange, not really wanting to go home right away. He did leave our house at one point to go to the store. And then I guess he came back and helped Jesse repair the fence at the house. And then finally, around 2 o'clock, Jesse said he left and he said he was going to go back home.
Later that evening, things took a strange twist when Terry's husband called Amber.
We never heard anything from him from 2:30 until about 8:30 p.m., which is when he called me that Friday night to tell me that he filed the missing persons report on my mom, which was odd because you would think that he would have called me and said, "Hey, have you seen your mom? I can't find your mom. She's not here." Everything was left behind of hers. Her cell phone, keys to the car. The car was left behind. Her wallet, ID card, debit card, cell phone, and all of the cigarettes that she just bought. She's a frequent smoker, so she's constantly smoking, putting it out, smoking, going back. So she's always smoking. So there was a brand new pack, 4 packs of cigarettes that were just bought because I had looked at the receipt and they were still in the bag. So she's never had history of doing that, ever. Never in her life has she ever just randomly disappeared and never reached out. She was really close with me and my family, her mom and her sister. So we always knew where she was or what she was doing. So he called me 8:30 p.m. and said, "I've got to file the police report on your mom. I can't find her. All her stuff's here." And I didn't think anything twice of that. I'm like, okay, well, maybe she stayed the night at a friend's house and just tell him and I'll just, you know, hear from them in the morning.
By the following morning, Amber was starting to feel uneasy about the situation. Amber decided to head over to the home her mom shared with her husband and his son.
That next morning when I woke up for work, I didn't feel right. I felt that things were odd. So I ended up leaving work and went straight to his house unannounced. And when I came up to the house, him and his son were really close to each other, you know, having a deep conversation. And as soon as they seen me walking up the ramp to the house, his son went towards the back of the house and Dale stayed towards the front. And I walked in the door and I said, "You know, what's going on?" He goes, "I don't know. I just found her, you know, all her stuff left behind." I said, "Well, what time did you call the police?" He said, 6 p.m. And I'm like, why didn't you call me in between all that to ask me if I had seen her, if maybe she showed up at my house? He goes, "I don't know. I just figured that if all her stuff was left behind and her car was here, she wouldn't have had a way to get up there." So then I reached out to the police department and I told them that something wasn't right. Like, my mom just disappeared, that this isn't like her. And they didn't really take me seriously enough. Just considered it like a missing person. You know, adults disappear all the time and they come back. When I showed up to the house that Friday morning, the first thing that I realized was Dale's white pickup truck was missing. And it was always on the property. It never really went anywhere. The truck was missing, as well as one cigarette being left in the ashtray, which goes to tell me the last time that my mom was around is that last cigarette, which I'm sure probably was the last time that I had talked to her. Because as I said, she was frequent and the ashtray was always full. The trash cans were empty, completely empty. They're big recycling trash cans. And that morning I checked all that stuff and it was empty. There was no trash in there. I told the police that the pickup truck was gone. They asked Dale where that truck was, and he had stated that it was at his son's shop in Parker getting the dents out of it. So the police never went up there, never pulled the truck for prints or DNA, or I guess just took his word for it. Then when they had asked him, "When do you have plan on having it returned?" He's like, "I'm really not sure." Well, then this truck returned about 4 days later on his property, and I overlooked the truck and it still had all the dents in his truck that were supposedly supposed to be getting taken out.
So we know that Amber had seen and spoken to her mom on the evening of Thursday, August 23rd. The last contact was when Terry called to say that she couldn't watch the kids the following morning. Then, Terry's husband Dale showed up at Amber's home around 6 a.m. He had not called to indicate that he planned to come watch the kids in place of Terry. Amber and Jesse had no clue that he planned to do this, and had already made plans themselves to have Jesse stay home with the kids. So you're probably wondering what Dale's story is. According to Dale, he woke up on the morning of Friday, August 24th, 2018, and Terry was asleep in bed. He kissed her goodbye around 5 a.m. and told her that he loved her, and he said that Terry said, "I love you" back. Then he left to drive to Amber's house. To Amber's fiancé, Jesse, this day was strange. It was odd how Dale just showed up, but then he seemed to be stalling. Dale said that he would just hang out for a bit because he had driven all of that way. Dale and Jesse had coffee together. Jesse remembers Dale appearing to be extremely exhausted. Dale left around 11 a.m. to go to a local marijuana dispensary, and then returned again around 12. He stayed for about another hour and helped Jesse repair a fence. According to Dale, he returned to the home that he shared with Terry around 2 to 2:30 p.m., and he noticed that nearly all of Terry's belongings were on the table, including her cell phone, wallet, ID, keys, debit card, and cigarettes. But Terry was nowhere to be found. One thing that Dale did report was missing from the home were Terry's medications. Terry had a close friend who lived next door. Dale said that he assumed she was over at the friend's house, and after an hour, he went over there to see if that's where Terry was. However, her friend said that she hadn't seen Terry. Dale said that he then went and drove around looking for Terry before going to the police to report her missing around 6 p.m. Later, he called Amber around 8:30 and let her know that he had reported her mom missing. Geraldine told us how she learned that Terry had disappeared.
When Amber called me and told me that she was missing, and I got off of work right away, and I went over and watched the grandkids. And I know that she wouldn't just leave because she loved those grandkids more than anything in the world. And she's the one that used to take care of them when they were little because I was working. And they missed her dearly. And my grandchildren, they were going crazy.
Geraldine had the opportunity to ask Dale what he remembered about the last time he saw Terry. This is what she told us about that conversation.
And I asked him, I go, "Well, what happened? Why was she crying and all that?" And he goes, "I don't know, Jerry." He goes, "Jerry," he goes, "I know that I got up early because I had to go watch the kids. She was just having one of her breakdowns," because he blamed it on her bipolar. "She might have not have taken her medicine and she's just acting crazy." He said, "I know that I got up and I said, I'm going to go watch the kids." And he didn't even call my son to tell him that he was going. So my son had already called off on that day so that he can, you know, take care of the kids. He said, "I'm going to go watch the kids because you're not feeling right." He said that she was laying on bed and she had all her clothes on. She didn't even put her jammies on or nothing. He said, "I thought that was kind of weird. And like she was ready to go somewhere." And I said, "Well, where would she go? Where do you think she was going to go?" And he goes, "I don't know. She was just acting weird." And he said he kissed her on the forehead and that she was fine when he left.
Amber was able to get some help early on in the search efforts from a search group who went out to Terry's home with dogs.
Someone with an agency that I work for reached out to me and said, "Do you think this is normal?" I said, "No, not at all." Immediately, they called Rampart Rescue, which is a rescue team out here that has cadaver dogs and bloodhound dogs, things like that. And they began to search the area of where my mom lives at, searched the fields and didn't find anything. They did get a scent at the house, but nothing leaving the property.
While speaking with people in Terry's neighborhood, Geraldine heard one story from a neighbor that Terry was friendly with. This story piqued her interest.
If somebody was trying to hurt her, she would fight back. I mean, they heard arguing. The neighbor said it was really loud, but she said that pretty soon it was really quiet. And she didn't go over there to check on Terry until the next day in the morning. And she said that she went down there and she was knocking on the door in the morning on that Friday morning because they always had coffee outside, you know, on their table outside. It was August, so it was hot. And it was funny because she didn't answer the door and her car was there. She just thought, well, you know, what's wrong? Where is she? So then she just left and she went to her place. She didn't think nothing of it, you know, and then in the evening, I guess, when Dale got home, she asked him, where is Terry? I'm looking for Terry. I haven't seen her. He thought that Terry was with her. And he said, well, I thought maybe she's out with you or something at your house because I came home and she wasn't home.
When Kim heard from Amber that her sister had disappeared, she jumped into action. She made her way from Maryland to New Mexico to pick up their mom, and then they were off to Colorado to help with the search efforts.
I mean, I got on a plane almost immediately. Well, I flew from Maryland to New Mexico and then picked up my mother. And together we flew to Denver and we met with Amber and we decided immediately to go over to see Delbert. And when I first saw Delbert, almost one of the first things he said to us was, well, I saw her Thursday night. She came home and he was explaining how he had bought a new coffee maker and he was trying to explain to her how to do it. And he said, and I'm sitting here telling her how to do it, and I'm showing her. And then she leaned over and she goes, well, I don't understand. And he was verbatim kind of like reenacting the situation. And his anger that I saw when he was telling me the way that he was saying, well, you know, she just never gets anything. And I just said, it wasn't something that I don't know. Just the fact that here his wife is missing and he's talking to her sister, explaining the situation that was just, like, ridiculous. Why is he telling me that he was so angry with her and he was so mad because she didn't know how to do the coffee maker? It just didn't ring true. And then while I was there, we made all these flyers. Well, you know, Delbert didn't go out and hand out any flyers. He didn't go out and help us look for my sister. He did nothing. He sat at home and whenever the police would call, he would answer the questions, but he did not do anything in the way of trying to help us locate his wife. It was myself and my niece, Amber. My mother watched Amber's children, Terry's grandchildren that she cared for daily. And Delbert just sat in his house. And I found that to be really upsetting.
When Kim visited Terry and Dale's home, she wasn't quite sure what to make of the scene, particularly all of the things that Terry had left behind.
Well, number one, she was a chain smoker. She didn't inhale. She was nervous. She was a nervous person. She had kind of that nervousy tick. And she would just smoke her cigarette, but not inhale. She'd just puff on it and puff on it and puff on it. And she never went anywhere without her cigarette. So we get to Denver, and we're trying to get answers. And I'm in this state of, we're going to find her. I'm going to find what happened to my sister. That's all there is to it. I was upset, but more of, I'm on a mission. I'm on a mission. I'm on a mission. And when we got to the house and I saw that her purse was literally, if you were to walk in their front door, you could reach, you could lean your body over and reach and grab her purse or her wallet, not her purse, but her wallet and her cigarettes were right there. Those were sitting there. Her phone was on the charger, another 20 feet away. Apparently, they say her meds were gone. There was nothing in the garbage can, which was interesting. All their trash cans were empty. It wasn't time for the trash man to come. It wasn't a trash man day. So we found that interesting.
There was another strange interaction that Kim had with Dale. While she was still in Colorado searching for her sister, Kim told us more.
One thing that I really was blown away by, he did at one point, we went by and picked him up, and he said, I'll ride in the car with you guys for a minute. I want to go see at this Love station, which is a gas station. Well, in the back of Love, they have an area where they work on trucks and cars, like a shop back there. And I guess at one point in the last however many years he'd been living there, Delbert had worked there. And he said, well, let me go talk to any of these guys and see if they saw my wife, like near the Loves or anything of that nature. So he left the car and he went into this shop and he was there for maybe 30 seconds, 45 seconds max. He comes back and he says, well, you wouldn't believe it, but one of the guys said that they saw Terry at Love buying cigarettes. And I find that really hard to believe because, as it turns out, we ended up getting the film, the tapes that they save, and the police officers went through it. The sergeant went through all these tapes from days preceding and during that time, and Terry was nowhere on any, and it took, you know, a week to do this, apparently, and they didn't find her anywhere. So I feel that he was lying. I don't feel like Gilbert was telling the truth. I think he was trying to get us off course. I don't know. It just, nothing felt good.
Kim spent a couple of weeks in Colorado searching for Terry, but unfortunately she couldn't stay forever and left feeling incredibly frustrated with the situation.
Having to leave 2 weeks later and having zero answers was really hard for me, but I had to get home. I still had a daughter in high school that I had to care for, and it was just weird. It was weird because I didn't feel like her husband was, he wasn't acting like a man that was completely thrown and needed his wife back. I'd just never seen anybody so, he had these crying fake tears and crap. I was just frustrated. I was mad. I didn't think that anybody was doing anything about it, and I still don't.
The Vanished is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up after the winter, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. It's a good time to think about the right amount of socializing for you. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you prefer more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. A therapist can help you learn how to set boundaries so you feel empowered to be the best version of yourself. Everyone can benefit from therapy. It's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/vanished today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/vanished.
Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And I was thrilled to learn that Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. I now have several items from Quince. I love their cardigans, pants, and shirts. I find their pieces to be easy to mix and match, and also to dress up or dress down. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/vanished for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/vanished to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/vanished. From the very beginning, many of those who knew Terry had been suspicious of her husband and his son. Amber told us about some of their actions that have raised suspicions.
I've had his family members reach out to me saying that he's a shady character, you can't trust him, he's a bad drunk, his ex-wife left him for the same reason. Neighbors said that they could always hear him screaming at my mom. My mom and her neighbor, they were best friends, and they had a code. Like, there was a secret code for each other. Like, if something got bad, they were to randomly yell this out. And she said she never saw my mom that night. She always saw my mom either out in the middle of the night because my mom couldn't sleep. She would always see her out. She never saw her that night or the next morning. The police questioned him and also his son and said that they got bad vibes from the son, Chris. Also that Dale was acting strange, but they asked them both to take a lie detector test. And Dale, I guess, took the lie detector test. And they said that at this point, they don't consider him, but it's still a strange situation that he still can't be overlooked. They asked his son to do a lie detector test, and he refused to take the lie detector test and was not cooperative with the police, and is still not cooperative with the police at this time. I ended up reaching out to the son And then he just flipped out, basically saying that, you know, your mom's crazy, you're crazy, I don't know what your guys' problem is. And he has a bad criminal history, domestics, protection orders, trespassing, obstruction with the police, hindering police. So ever since all this, he never once mentioned anything to me as far as, I'm sorry about your mom, if there's anything I can do. Like, he always walks the other way every time he sees anybody from my family. Dale also, the day when the police came with the dogs, he never volunteered to go out there and help look. He said, why should I? The police are out there looking. I don't need to.
Kim explained to us that she also knew that Terry was making plans to leave Dale, and she's concerned that this may have put her sister in danger.
My sister became very unhappy with Delbert, and she was talking to my mom quite a lot about trying to get out on her own. She was trying to figure out a way that she could make it on her own. So from my understanding, she did get her own bank account, and this was behind his back. He didn't know that she was doing this. And from what I understand, her, the next payment that she was getting from her second husband's retirement would be going into this other account that she was opening. She was talking to my mother about locating a place to live that was for people with lower incomes. So I know she was on that route because she would call me and just tell me that he was being mentally abusive to her and that he was always drunk and he was always high and he just sat around. She told me he just sat around all day long and that, you know, he would never give her any affections. I don't think they had any intimate affairs for months and months. And I think she just really wanted out.
We don't have access to Terry's banking records, so we don't know exactly when or where she opened this new account, or what day the next deposit from her second husband's retirement was due to post. Amber told us what she's learned about this.
She had a regular account, and she had my dad's money coming to her on a regular. She was getting ready to leave Dale, and she went and opened up another account, which is the one that he didn't know about. And then her first set of checks went to that account. So only the one check, and then it got stopped because the military found out about it from my stepdad. And he basically let DFAS know, like, hey, there's a situation going on. My ex-wife, Terry, we need to see what we can do. So then the military put a hold on her account. So her first set of checks did go up into that new account.
Amber explained that Dale told her that he found out about the bank account after Terry disappeared. But his statements to police seemed to contradict this.
So from what he told me, he found out about that secret account, I guess, from her neighbor. Because he had called me. It's like, hey, Amber, did you know your mom opened up another account without me knowing? So he found out, supposedly, through that neighbor. But I ended up getting a copy of some of the police report. Found out that he told the police they were arguing that night. And it was about her opening up another account. So he knew about it before he told me he knew about it. I just found this out. And the only thing he had mentioned was that he told my mom that she couldn't leave us without anyone watching the kids. And then he went and came over. So there was never any mention of them having a good verbal argument. And from what he told the police and what I seen in the statement, they were arguing the night before. There's even a portion in the report where the police were like, you know, where were you this day? What were these charges? Because he had made some charges in the morning that weren't adding up to the, I guess they sent a detective over to the places that he claimed that he made these stops at and pulled receipts. And so things were adding up. And in the report, they even said, well, it sounds like you're having a hard time remembering the questions that we're asking you. He goes, of course, my wife is missing. I'm having a hard time remembering everything that you guys are asking me. So they even said that in the report. So it sounds like there's doubt as far as the police goes and their belief in his story.
Geraldine told us about a time after Terry had disappeared, when she was over at Amber and Jesse's home helping them move, when Dale came over and was talking about the bank account situation.
I remember one day when after she was missed, and he was telling Amber, I don't know why your mom went and changed our bank account. We have insurance together. Are you going to help me out with the payment? And Amber said, no, I'm not. Why should I help you? Because I guess it was together, their life insurance.
And I thought that was kind of strange for him to ask her, because he couldn't get to her account. He couldn't get no money out of there because she had changed it already. And I was there because she was moving out of her house, and they had bought a house. So I was there, and I was cleaning the cabinets out and cleaning up the place. And he came, and that's when he told her that. And she just said, why should I have to pay it? We don't even know where mom's at. And he's like, oh, well, I don't know. We put a lot of money into that, and I sure don't know how to get the money to pay her half. And Amber said, well, I don't know what to tell you. I can't. She couldn't even get into her account.
All of this focus on Terry's money and the life insurance was concerning to Amber, and she wonders if it could point to a possible motive in her mom's case.
When all this was going on, you know, why this soon are you questioning me about her money and, you know, all this stuff? That should be like the least of your concerns right now. And so that's what threw me off. And that's when I ended up finding out that she had life insurance, but she never carried life insurance. And I ended up finding out information with some surprise that gave it to me. I found out that she had Colonial Penn insurance. So I called over to Colonial Penn because I ended up finding documents at their house. I ended up calling them. I said, hey, I just want to know what the situation is. I said, my mom is currently missing. I said, and I don't want her husband to have access to the funds. I said, what is your guys' policy, you know, as far as someone actively missing and being able to take out any money? And they basically told me, well, no funds can be withdrawn until, I guess, the person is declared legally deceased, which has kind of got me worried because Colorado statute is 5 years. From what he was telling the police at the time, and I happened to be there when the police were questioning him, and that's exactly how I found out about the insurance, and I ended up finding the forms. And looking at the date that I guess they went and did this, was in July, which, like I said, was kind of funny because my mom used to always tell me, you know, if I ever get life insurance, I'm not putting him on my policy because he won't put me on his medical insurance and he keeps me off his accounts, that kind of thing. So she always said that she wasn't going to ever put him on one. And it's just strange that they went actively got one in July.
We know that statistically, leaving an abusive relationship can be the most dangerous time. You've heard from several people who Terry confided in about the abuse she endured and all of the plans that she was making to leave, including setting up a new bank account for herself, seeking out assistance, and finding low-income housing. Terry received a monthly payment from her second husband's retirement account, and this was the payment that she had moved to her new secret account. Could Dale have noticed that this deposit didn't show up in the other account when it normally would? Or could he have uncovered some of her other plans to leave? Whenever someone goes missing, emotions run high, and it's normal for the spouse or significant other to be looked at first. Amber told us about a confrontation her brother had with Terry's husband, Dale.
My brother came out and asked him in his face, straight to his face, he said, I just want to know, did you kill my mom? Did you get rid of her? And he didn't give him eye contact. He kept his face to the ground and said, no, I didn't have anything to do with it. He wouldn't even look at him. He came over to my house one day, Dale did. And I said, Dale, you know, I said, well, you go out there just one last time. Just help me go look for mom. Like, I don't think I can rest without, you know, looking. And he goes, and he just kind of looked at me and looked at the ground. And then he said, I'm going to be sick. And then he puked over my deck. He always would never talk about it. He seemed real shady about the whole situation.
Amber also felt uneasy about Dale's son, Chris. She hadn't spoken to him since her mom disappeared. She was aware that the police department had asked him to take a polygraph exam and he declined. We know that polygraph exams are often unreliable and aren't admissible in court, but they still continue to be used as a tool by law enforcement today. Amber decided to send Chris a text message asking if he knew where her mom was. And this is what Chris said in his response. Special thanks to Mark from the Catch My Killer podcast for reading this for us.
I know no more than what I told the detectives from the very beginning. I did nothing wrong. I don't know where she is. I don't know anything about her whereabouts or what caused her to go missing. Nothing that has happened warrants me taking a lie detector test for any reason. Not even doing a search on the internet about a lie detector test. In a situation like this, advises me in taking one. In fact, every site I search says no way to taking one. So no, I won't let my rights be infringed just because you need to feel better or to feel like your mom wasn't mentally ill or had a drug problem, particularly meth and coke, among also abusing her prescription drugs regularly. And the dogs that you got to sniff the property also found her going to a known drug house recent to her going missing. I was also made aware of a time when your mom asked your mother-in-law about meth too, so point your finger somewhere where it makes more sense. You can pretend I had any involvement in her missing all you want. Doesn't change the fact that I didn't have any involvement, nor do I know where the fuck she is. But all you want to do is accuse people who aren't guilty of anything. I'm only guilty of basically sleeping at my dad's and going to work trying to open my company. That's it. You and the fucking clown-ass police can go fuck yourselves for all of your harassment. Because that's all that this is. And if your contact with me has been nothing but harassment. This isn't tell me where she is and I will leave you alone. What the fuck, dumb? I don't know where the fuck she is. Contact me again about this or have any friends contact me again about this and I will call and add to the complaint with Parker PD. I already called them about this months ago. And I will take the next contact as a threat and will treat it accordingly. Leave me the fuck alone.
Chris is clearly angry in this message, and we don't fault anyone for choosing to decline taking a polygraph. However, he does make some claims about Terry here that we would like to address. Amber told us that Terry may have used some drugs recreationally in her youth, decades ago, but that this was not something she continued to partake in as she got older. By this point in her life, Terry was 56 years old and regularly responsible for caring for her young grandchildren. Amber said that Terry had tried marijuana with her husband a few times, which is legal in Colorado, but that Terry was frustrated with how much Dale was drinking and using various substances. So this was something that she was trying to discourage in their relationship. The few times that Terry did try marijuana, she told Amber that she didn't like how it made her feel and didn't wish to use it again in the future. Chris also mentioned that Terry was abusing prescription medication. Amber told us that Terry had sustained a severe injury while at work. She was temporarily put on pain medication, but Terry chose to discontinue that treatment because she was aware of the risk of becoming dependent on the medication.
She had like a traumatic neck injury that occurred to her when she used to be a phlebotomist at the hospital. And this patient grabs her by the neck while my mom was trying to grab blood, and she had dementia. And so she like was grabbing on my mom's neck and banging it on the chair, on the bed. So my mom actually had to quit that job because she was in all that pain. And so that's why she was put on pain medication. She was taking those for a while, and then she got off. She told the doctor she didn't want to be on them anymore because she didn't want to be addicted to them.
For Amber, she feels as though Chris made all of these unfounded accusations about her mom to paint her in a negative light and deflect the attention off of him. Chris also mentioned in that text message a complaint that he filed with the Parker Police Department. Amber told us what unfolded with that.
Around June, I ended up getting this phone call from one of the hospitals out here. And they're like, "Hi, this is so-and-so, a nurse from this hospital. We're trying to get a hold of Dale Ackerman, and you're listed as his next of kin. And we haven't been able to get a hold of him. He's missed some of his doctor's appointment. And we're wondering if you could let him know." And I told him, I said, "Okay, well, first of all, I said, there's a family issue going on right now. I want to be taken off his next of kin." I was like, "But I will try and reach out to his son to let him know that you guys can get a hold of him, see if he can reach out to his son." So as soon as I got off the phone, I called my boyfriend. I'm like, "What do you think I should do? You know, as weird as it is, like, I'd feel bad if this guy was laying dead inside of his house." And so I called the police first. I told the police, I said, "I just got a call from the hospital. Can you guys go by and do a welfare check on Dale Ackerman at this address?" Then after that, I got my phone out and I text Chris. I said, "I'm just letting you know that I received a call from the hospital in reference to Dale. They can't get a hold of him. I just thought you should know." So I left it at that. didn't hear nothing back from him, didn't even know if he had the same phone number. And so this was in June. And then come August, I got a private number that called my phone. I was at work, so I called back, checked my messages, and it was an officer from Parker. So I got this call from this Parker officer, and he's like, "Hi, I just am calling just to let you know I've been contacted by Chris Ackerman, and he wants me to tell you to stop contacting him." And this is August. So here I'm thinking, I said, "Well, what are you talking about?" I said, "I haven't contacted him." And he's like, "Well, he said that you text him." And then I'm thinking, I'm like, "You know what?" I was like, "I did." I said, "I did text him." I said, "That was back in June." I said, "To tell him about his dad." I said, "But that's it." And so I started to tell this officer kind of what was going on. And he's like, "Oh, he didn't tell me any of that. He didn't tell me that there was bad blood in the family because your mom's missing and all this stuff." He's like, "I'll just let you know that he was telling me that he was demanding me," is what he said, "that I needed to press charges on you for contacting him for harassment." I said, first of all, I said, "That's not harassment." I said, and second of all, I said, "I work for a 911 center. I'm not going to jeopardize my job for this asshole. All I did was text him because I thought he should know about his father." I said, "That's all it was." And he's like, "Yeah, well, he was just cussing at me and yelling at me, you know, and I told him that there was nothing I could do except call you and tell you not to contact him." So he's got it out for me, I suppose.
Going back to the day after Amber last saw her mom, and she called later that night to say she couldn't babysit the next day. Something about how Dale showed up the following morning and spent the day with Amber's fiance was so odd.
"Why would you just show up at my house unannounced and tell us that you're going to watch the kids?" There was like an 11-hour window from the night that I talked to her until when he showed up at my house. And Jesse, my fiance, says he looked extremely tired, like he had been up all night, like he hadn't slept. So just everything about the situation just seems strikingly odd, and how he was just abusive to my mom. He would always tell us, like, "I don't know how much more of this shit I can take with your mom. I can't take it anymore. I can't deal with this. She's trying to control my drinking and my, you know, my marijuana smoking." So it was random comments like that.
Amber says that her communications with law enforcement have been less than ideal. And to her, it seems like they aren't doing much with her mom's case at this point.
"It's just been really hard getting any help from the police. Lock Bowie Police Department is a small department. They don't have qualified personnel that has handled cases like this. So it just seems like they've kind of given up. They've said they could do what they've done and that's it. And if they hear anything new that I would know about it right away." They're not communicative at all with any of this. So it's been hard. A lot of that, I think, is that they're small and they don't have the resources. And when I told them that before, I said, "Well, why don't you just give the case to Weld County? You know, Weld County is the county that oversees Lock Bowie." They're like, "No, you know, that's why the resources are out there, so we can reach out to them." And we've reached out to all the resources, and now it's just kind of waiting, and we'll do the follow-up, and, you know, and that's about it. So they've contacted CBI. CBI has entered her information, and NamUs, they've put her information in there. She's also listed under, like, the missing person registry, and that's about as far as they've gone with it.
We did contact the Lock Bowie Police Department to request an interview and records. They declined our record request and failed to respond to our many messages about an interview. So we can't tell you exactly what they've done to look for Terry. However, they have told local media outlets that they're continuing to work the case today. Early on, Amber kept in contact with her mom's husband, Dale. But since then, communication between them has broken down.
I haven't talked to him in almost a year. Every time I look at him, I get sick. Something isn't right. And everyone in my family, friends that I know, officers that I know that I work for, you know, since I work for a dispatch center that were out there doing that search with me that night, said that he was acting strange, like he seemed guilty.
Kim has also lost touch with Dale.
I have not spoken to him. I haven't had any communication. He sent me a mug for Christmas, not the year after, but 2019. He sent me for Christmas a mug with my sister's face on it. Tossed it in the mail, and I don't even think there was a card in it, but I knew it was from him. In fact, he called me and said, "Hey, did you get the gift?" which was very kind. Yet we've never talked again. We've never discussed anything. We just, from my perspective, I haven't spoken to him because I don't trust him. I don't think that anything that he says is coming out of his mouth is the truth.
Amber has a theory about what happened to her mother on the evening of August 23rd, 2018. After she spoke to her mother on the phone for the final time and she seemed upset.
What I think happened was that that night when I talked to her from 7:30 p.m. until when he showed up at 6 a.m., I said, that's 11 hours that they could have came up with a plan, drove to his son's shop in Parker, which is like 45 minutes away, did away with her, left the truck there, cleaned the truck, drove him back enough time to bring him over to my house and have an alibi. All that stuff is crucial.
I think it was probably an accident. You know, maybe they got into an argument and he was drinking. Maybe things got out of hand and something happened and then he needed to find a way to cover it up. Like, I don't think it was premeditated. But then again, I don't know. But that's my feeling inside, is that maybe it was an accident. And it was that, like, oh, crap, what do? I need to cover this up. But maybe it might be something else. It could very well potentially be. But just the way that things have added up, and the stories, and how he shows up to my house and the truck is gone, and how they've been not trying to help the police, that's what makes me feel like, okay, I feel like you guys are hiding something. And that makes me feel like it might not be something else. It's really hard to say, because there's any kind of situation that could cause someone to go missing, you know? They are monitoring her account. No money's been taken out. And she always needed to get something. She always had her debit card, but there's been no activity, not even on her military bank account, no activity anywhere, no sightings anywhere, no witnesses, nothing. So that just goes to show me, like, she's not here.
Kim has similar thoughts about what may have happened to her sister.
Did he have something to do with her disappearance? I think he may have. I think maybe it was not planned. I think that maybe Delbert struck her and he knocked her out. Maybe she hit her head and she died and he didn't know what to do and he did something to get rid of the body. I don't know, but I think that that's plausible. I do, with all the area around Colorado, and they had a truck in their front driveway. They had like 5 vehicles because Delbert was one of these guys that would pick up old cars. There was a white truck that was parked in front of the house, the neighbors had said, and it disappeared on that Thursday evening and did not come back until the following week on Wednesday. The cops never looked at the truck. I mean, lots of things were dropped in this case that should have been looked at further. I don't even think they went through her house. Lots of things weren't done properly. And I'm not a police officer to know that. I just have felt that there was a lot of things that just were looked over or not taken into consideration. And so here we are almost 3 years later, and we still don't have any leads, nothing. We have absolutely, we're no further along than we were the day that my sister disappeared.
It's been nearly 3 years since Amber last saw her mom. She never imagined that this would go on for so long with no resolution. The not knowing continues to be difficult for Amber and her family.
That's the hard part. It's like when you know that someone's ill, you know it's coming. But when you're just blindsided and you see them one day and you don't the next, it's like it's a lot of unanswered stuff. And you just feel like you just got to keep going until you know that you've tried everything.
Kim struggles with all of the what-ifs. What if Terry's disappearance is related to her mental health and her husband wasn't involved at all? What could have happened to her sister?
I think what's hard for me is if she is still alive, I fear that she's probably not in a very good place. Because if she didn't have her medication and stuff, and that scares me, being this long out, you know, almost 3 years, so my heart's so unsettled. So I just super duper miss her, and I hope that with the help of you guys and other people, we can get her story out there more. I'm actually headed to Denver in a couple of weeks. I'm currently in a travel trailer. My husband and I have been on the road for the last 2.5 months, and we're headed up to Denver and that area. We're going to go spend some time up there and see if we can at least ruffle some feathers and get somebody moving a little bit further. I don't know.
So what happened to Terry Ackerman after she spoke to her daughter on the evening of August 23rd, 2018, when she said that she wouldn't be able to watch her grandchildren the following morning? What had occurred within that short period of time between the first and second phone calls? During the first call, Terry sounded fine, and then a couple hours later, she was upset. Terry had also seemed upset when she spoke to her sister Kim the day prior. Was Terry having second thoughts about leaving Dale? Or had Dale uncovered her plans to leave him and there was some sort of argument? Dale says that the following morning, August 24th, he kissed his wife goodbye and drove to Amber's home to watch her kids in Terry's place. But even that was odd. He had never called to tell them that he planned to do this, so Amber's fiancé Jesse had already taken the day off of work. He reported that he seemed exhausted, like he had been up all night, and it seemed like he was stalling for some reason. Was Dale spending the day with Jesse and the kids to try to establish some sort of alibi? Or is Dale telling the truth? Did he really kiss Terry goodbye that morning and something else happened after that time? It's important to note that while Dale says he had seen Terry that morning, no one else has come forward saying that they saw Terry that day. No one else had seen or heard from Terry since the night before. Could Terry have walked away on her own, leaving behind all of her belongings except her medicine? Could Terry have been having a mental health crisis? No one can say for sure. But one thing that is clear is that Terry and Dale's relationship showed many warning signs of abuse, and we know that Terry was planning and trying to leave him. It's very difficult to ignore that aspect of this story. If you have any information about the disappearance of Terry Ackerman, please call the Loch Buie Police Department at 303-659-1395. You can follow developments in Terry's case on social media at Help Find Terry Ann Ackerman.
What they told me, they're like, well, you know, it's not a crime to disappear as an adult. I said, I understand that. I was like, but this is, you know, this isn't a normal situation. People disappear and then they come up, but they show back up, you know, days later. And I get that. But it's like when you have a family member telling you, like, this isn't right, this isn't normal, I just feel like these agencies need to really be listening to that, because a lot of things get missed in between that time frame.
When we spoke, she always made me laugh, my sister, and she was like my cheerleader. I just miss her so much. You know, my best friend had a stroke shortly after my sister disappeared. She can't talk, so I feel like I lost two people that were so close to me. My sister I was working this job at Legislative Services one of the sessions, and it was super boring, and she would call me and she'd be singing on the other line. She'd say, my beautiful sister, you are so beautiful and you make my life shine. She was just precious. She was just so sweet.
You know, and that's why I told Amber, I said, we got to find out where she's at, what happened to her, because this man, if he did something to her, why is he getting away with everything? What did he do? Where did he hide her at? Where did he put her at? Why can't nobody find her? And Amber needs closure. See, I thought they were a happy couple until that day that she came to my house. And then that's when she just told me everything. And I said, gee, I didn't know that. I said, you guys look so happy. She goes, well, you don't know what goes on, you know, indoors. I'm not saying that he did it, but I'm just saying who else could have done this?
That brings us to the end of episode 295. I'd like to thank everyone for taking the time to speak with us for this story. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. If you'd like to join in on the discussion, there's a page and discussion group on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at thevanishedpod and also on Instagram. If you enjoy this show, subscribe now and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening right now. Do you want to help support the show? There are a couple things that you can do. One way to help The Vanished is by supporting our sponsors. You can find links and promo codes in the episode notes. Another way to support the show is by contributing on Patreon, where you can get early and ad-free episodes. Be sure to tune in next week. We'll be covering a case from Utah. Thanks for listening.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run deeper. In this new thriller, available exclusively on Wondery Plus, religion and crime collide when a gruesome murder rocks the isolated Montana community. Everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager, but local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter federal agent V.B. Loreau, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity. The pair form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law, her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot, and someone is watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy nominee Sanaa Lathan and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook is available exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.